Thank you, Sharda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, we're going to be exploring a lot today, and we're just going to launch things this morning, and that will be complete in itself, I think. So we're going to venture into intimacy, but actually we want to not only explore the intimate aspects of ourselves. We want to explore what it really means to enjoy the intimacy, enjoy each other, and really feel the actual expression of the liberation as a thriving, living, vivid, bubbling experience of what it means to be a human being. So we know that there's a great deal of emphasis in spiritual traditions, and a very useful one, regarding suffering and what it means to be liberated from suffering. And this is very profound and important work. Then what is the question? And for us, the then what is, what does it mean to enjoy that liberation with each other? So we're going to begin with a meditation that's a step into that kind of energy of the liberated being that shows up within time and space, called human beings. So I'd like you to, we're going to spend a few minutes in silence, and we're going to do a particular meditation to get us going, ignite the engine for takeoff. I'd like you to be sitting straight so that your attention is easily followed into the gravitational pull of your body being held by your belly. So to sit back is not going to do it. To sit too forward, see if you can find a place where the midline really sinks right into the center of your belly. And I'd like you to breathe, and you can have your eyes closed or open, it doesn't matter. Breathe deep in on your exhale. Let your exhale just fall, letting your body fall right into the middle of your belly, where I'd like you to visualize a flame, a simple flame, golden, reddish, orangey flame. Of course, if it turns other colors, fine. So we'll sit for a few minutes following your breath into that flame, letting it be oxygenated by your breath.
So in each one of these talks, what we call book talks, we have a book, do a few talks. Each one of the talks presents some element of some facet of the topic. So we thought this today's topic will focus on the question of relationships, human relationships. How does the question or the experience of what we in the book call divine eros manifest in various forms of relationships? Because human beings generally live together with each other, and our understanding and our realization, our enlightenment, if it's going to express itself, it will be mostly with each other. So what does divine eros adds or contributes or reveal about that possibility of relating to each other? Sound? You're not hearing it well, so it's good.
I will take it higher.
How about now? Is that better? Not yet?
We're trying to get someone to come check this down.
I'm right here.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Is it? We want to make sure everybody here. Yeah, my voice tend to not be as piercing as others. So,
but would you like me to channel you?
Use Carrie's bell.
We help each other out occasionally.
So we want to talk a little bit about what do we mean by divine eros? Why divine eros? Why eros? And what does it mean for eros to be divine? That's the first thing we need to have some understanding of, because that brings in the question of illumination, inner illumination, whichever way we call it, into life. It's a way it brings it into life. That the illuminated awareness as it interacts with life, it has in it a love, it has in it aliveness, it has in it a kind of delight to be together. We are brings in the sensitivity and the kindness to each other, difficulties and suffering, but there's also the enjoyment and the celebration of being meeting itself in another. So how does being, or how true nature, meets itself in another? What does it say? What does it do? And how does it say it and do it? So there's a lot we can say about our true nature, or the inner nature of illumination, when we have in touchness, when we have immediacy of being ourself, of being the true awareness of the true consciousness, in terms of awareness, illumination, clarity, emptiness. But what comes to life, all of these are there. But living has a lot of activity, a lot of interaction, interactivity. And what is the quality of that interactivity? And what's the range of it? What can happen in it? Because true nature, and it's inherent to it, undisturbed is pure bliss. The true awareness is pure bliss. The clear light is clear light of bliss. True nature is not only timeless, but undiluted light. So when two come together, in fact, most of the time, when we are human, instead of being a distortion of a human, we want to delight in each other. The intimacy is feeling each other, feeling the proximity, the unity, and the similarity and sameness, the expression of enjoyment and delight in it, and life becomes the life, not just my life. I am feeling alive and being myself, whether I am feeling free or vast, but as I interact with somebody else, there are varieties in depending on the other. First of all, recognizing the other is just like me and is an expression of the same delightful awareness. And then how does this delightful awareness express itself between two people depending on their kind of relationship?
And when we talk about the sameness, what we mean here is that that light is the same light in everybody. But how it expresses itself is unique and different for everyone. So there's a sameness that underlies that when we're in touch with our nature, has a calm, has a steadiness, has a equanimity to it. The differences are how that equanimous light expresses itself in the very particular expression of you, of what you are. You're not like anyone else. So it's a blend, a dance of what is the same and what is different. And so you're not trying to find out what's the same and only focus on what's similar, but in our maturity, as we mature with that light through what's unique about us, we learn to appreciate differences. We learn to appreciate the unique ways that that light is expressed through an individual consciousness. So it's important to recognize the same, what is the one, what is the one that expresses itself, that we are the one, but we also are one of the many at the same time. And that each person is not just some kind of clone. It's an expression of that one that's unique and different. So there's that, it's a necessary foundation to recognize those attributes for every human being, that there's similarity of what is our nature, and there's the differences of how that's expressed.
Yeah, the differences in each one, when you recognize another as an expression of the same, that one is a wholeness, is a body, mind, speech, heart, qualities, history, and capacities, all as one thing, as one unified being. And usually, in the English language, that wholeness is called a person. And that's, between the two of us here, what we mean by a person. We don't mean the problematic self, that spiritual teaching are after. We mean the person which is the unique manifestation of reality as it appears through the particular individual that you are.
That's inseparable from the oneness, from the unity. And as we're talking about this, I'm getting very excited. There's an energy that can burst forth when we recognize the kind of liberation that can happen when we understand really what a person is and what the real relationship is to that oneness and to another person. Because if that person is truly an expression of the oneness, inseparable from the oneness, that is the most exciting kind of liberation that we can have within time and space, to know what we are beyond time and space and slice into it without leaving the timelessness. Slice into time and space and burst forth as a unique individual, completely settled, completely outside of time and space, but bursting forth and expressing that liberation within time and space with another slice of that time and space. And it's got a tremendous amount of potential. When we talk about recognizing and liberating our potential, what is that? Where does potential come from? It's like that equanimity starts to feel itself teetering on an edge and pops open into time and space, and that has a tremendous amount of energy. Like we are a big bang. We are the big bang as life energy, as potency, as tremendous bubbling, sizzling potential. And that's what we are as human beings, or that's one of the possibilities. We can be equanimous and settled. We can be very self-possessed. At the same time, bursting with potential. And a dance of back and forth. It's not like, well, you recognize the potential and your potency, and then you're just sort of bursting everywhere all the time and expressing yourself constantly. No, it's like that bubbling potential is there, expressing itself in all ways, in every relationship.
Yeah. Most of the time, though, people don't experience themselves that way. We're talking about now. So we don't want to gloss over the usual most of the time. When we're not recognizing the beauty or the fullness of our potential, usually we are, you know, in a conflicted individual or a hurt person or, mad somebody or somebody having a hard time or dealing with situation. That's the usual thing. It is really the same individual, but appearing in some kind of limitation, some kind of limitation to the liberation. So we don't want to say that you should always feel yourself as the liberated, free individual. Most of the time, we're not. Most of the time, we're happy if we get out of bed and remember to brush our teeth. Some of us can't even remember to do that. So the individual lives and works and does taxes and has to deal with bills and have to deal with issues and do your emails and deal with people's emotions and reaction, your own, all. We don't want to. That's most what usually happens. And there is a great deal of practice and a great deal of work that need to be done to work through those ways of experiencing ourselves before the true egg bursts out, what the Taoists call the egg. The belly is usually where the egg is. The egg of the, what they call the eternal embryo bursts out as the true individual that manifests.
But even when that egg manifests, it doesn't mean, like I was saying, that you're expressing enjoyment only. But that's so much more there than we know. Bye. Like on our way over today, we were driving along and just felt like nothing was happening. Absolutely nothing was happening. We're just driving along and feeling empty, and empty in a nice way, just sort of cleaned out. I said, "So how you doing?" He said, "Nothing." I said, "Yeah, me too." Like literally nobody there, nothing going on, nothing happening. And I started thinking about what it was going to be like to be here. I thought, I don't have any idea. I don't know who's going to be there, what's going to happen. I knew a couple of people might be here. And then all of a sudden, something started to bubble up, start to happen, start to manifest. People started gathering. I started to feel more coming forward in some way. And as we meditated, I just started feeling more of this feeling of fullness, and then excitement, and then bubbling, and starting to expand into that. When I leave here today, I don't know what's going to happen. So it's not a matter of finding that life and that fullness and that sense of aliveness that we're calling, that's part of the erotic. To have the erotic in life means that we feel that life energy, and we feel that life energy with the love and enjoyment of life, so that life is an encounter, and that we're really interpenetrating with life in its context, but also we start to see that we are the energy of life, that that is what that potential is, that that potency is life itself, expressing itself through us as a life form. So when we think of being in life, we think of all the contexts of life, we think the content of life. When actually, when we feel alive, we feel that we're really in life. We feel that we are meeting life with life, with that energy of life. And so that's a possibility for us. It's a possibility that allows life, allows us to meet life in ways that are sensitive, in ways that are responsive, but also in ways that are enjoyable. So divine eros is to enjoy this world in the physical time and space and meet it with fully who we are, fully what we are. Welcome back. And that fullness and aliveness as one contactful expression, feel and the love for the contact and the love in the interaction, but the feeling of that aliveness brings in the erotic quality to love that has all of life and our interrelationships as having a component of the erotic. So it's not just in the sexual sphere, but we can focus on that some, which we'll focus on a little bit more in the afternoon. But it's in all relationships where this erotic, full, connected, contactful kind of quality that brings in a voluptuous sense of really meeting somebody, but not just to meet, but meeting with an interactive, energetic, sensuous kind of quality, where the flirtation and the mingling isn't just a gender-related or sexually-related kind of back and forth, but it's the aliveness and the sensuality of meeting and being together and feeling the fullness, the sweetness, and that energy. So what makes it divine is being in touch with the nakedness of that energy, the fullness of what we are, as well as that timelessness outside of time and space, where within the bubbles is the equilibrium and the equanimity. But that actually gives it more energy, more fire. So it's really feeling the fire of life and that erotic quality of interaction, regardless of the relationship. It doesn't have to be just sexual. But also when we think of divine, it's not only being in a condition where one is outside of time and space, expressing that within time and space. To be the illuminated light is a selfless condition where you aren't focused on the enjoyment for yourself. It's enjoyment expressing itself, the enjoyment of the universe coming through you, which means that you become a doorway, an open door to it, a conduit for the universe to express itself.
You know, we use the title Divine Eros in purpose, because usually most people, they have Eros and Divine separate. And Greek mythology, Eros was originally God, the God of love. But it's not only the God of love. You know, later on, when the Roman become Cupid, you know, with his arrows and all that, which we'll get to. But the quality about Eros is not only he was a God of love and sometimes think God of sex, but he was mischievous. He was a mischievous God of love. He liked to play and play tricks, because life is fun when it is mischievous. You see, not mischievous, but it's a divine mischievousness. That's why we combine divine and Eros. Eros is the mischievous God of love and sensuality. But it's divine, and the divinity, it brings in what Karen said, the selflessness. Like, it's not I'm trying to get something for myself. It is really an outer flow, a giving. It's just a natural, spontaneous delight and enjoyment and lovingness. But it's both selfless, not trying to get something out of it, but it's mischievous, it's playful, it is playing with things, it is interacting in a sort of, it's serious in the sense it's real, but it's light and lighthearted. And when you notice in your relationship, all your relationships, your friendship, your marriages, love relationship, when it actually has that delightful and non-self-centered mischievousness, that's really fun, right? You know, when it's always serious, it's good, it's useful, get the work done, you know. When it is, you know, self-centered, it's a little heavy, and, you know, it's not so much fun. But when it is free and it is selfless, it's respectful of life, but it has that mischievous, playful quality to it. Then it combines the lack of self-centeredness, it combines the spontaneity with kind of a playful,
back and forth interaction. Well, that is like the gods playing together. How do the gods play? If you're a god, god means selfless. But god is interacting. God and a goddess, or god and god, or goddess and god. How do they do it together? You see? How do they talk? How do they interact? If you read the stories of any of the gods, whether they're Indian or Greeks, or whatever, they're always playing pranks. They're always making trouble for each other. And for earthlings, too. Right? That's the story, and that's the story of Eros as a mischievous god of love. So the divine Eros had that quality of a playful, not completely straight arrow kind of relationship. I mean, relationship is unknown. What is happening between two people is a mystery yet. And to be seen, to be always known what it is, the relationship is in some sense is an old one. This sort of dead one. But when it is unknown, when it is mysterious, when you don't know what's going to happen next, that's what brings in the playfulness, because it's an experimentation. You say something, do something, you don't know what's going to come back. You think you've known the person, but if you're really here in the moment, if you're really expressing divine eros, you don't know who the person is, how they're going to manifest themselves in the next moment, what they're going to say.
That might be disconcerting for some people. And we try to plan all these things. The beauty of human beings is that any experience we have really is a opportunity to go into the unknown. It doesn't matter what it is. If you're suffering, if you're angry, if you're happy, whatever it is, feeling it fully and completely will enable that door to open to its source. Because the source of everything is beyond the way it appears at the surface. And that's true for relationships too. Human beings know that there is happiness and know that there's unself-consciousness, because we feel it at times, but we can't plan for it, and we don't know how to get back to it. We feel pleasure, but it often comes at times when we don't expect it. And we don't know really how do we liberate ourselves so that we can feel that and be more open to it. There's a great deal of work to be done that many of you have done that allows that door to open more and more frequently. But we often get into a whole trajectory of, oh, this is the condition under which I felt happy that time. And we try to do it again. And we try to make it happen. So we use the past to try to get us to feel something more in the future and forget that what we did is we forgot about the whole thing and we slipped through time and space into something that was much more divine. We need to remember to forget what we knew before and forget to use it to get somewhere else. That being in the center of any experience we're having right now is the freedom. That's where it is. It's not even in a place, but to actually move into any experience. And that happens most often when people fall in love. They get a taste of what it's like to drop in for a period of time where you're walking through the world, you've got rose-colored glasses, everybody thinks you're floating around, she'll come down to earth really soon. And you do. And when you do, then the relationship starts taking on a whole nother dimension of practicality and so on, and then you have to plan for those times of rosiness and melting and all of that. The question is really what it means to live life in a way that you can be grounded, be in this world, and allow for the kind of spontaneity and selflessness that arises when the heart has been opened and naked to another, and to remember the selflessness of when someone's happy that you love, how that makes you feel. When you want to do for them in a way that makes that even glow more strongly, that's a fulfilling kind of feeling for you too. And that's some of how Divine Eros functions, is to keep that door open to those possibilities of fulfillment of the relationship, because in that kind of energy and that kind of giving, the giving and the taking are the same action. And we know that, we've had experiences of that, because we feel that when we're fully giving, we're filling up.
Yeah, so that brings in the other point that you're alluding to, Karen, about what you mean divine eros. It's really the bringing together the unity that is possible to happen in all relationship between love and desire. The giving and wanting, usually we separate them. For most of us, we think desire is a problem, is a difficulty, or even though we always have desire, human beings are, you know, beings of desire. But spiritual teaching tells us desire is a problem, desire is a source of suffering. And all that is true for most desire. However, divine eros in its mischievousness brings desire in such a way that it is selfless. It makes desire selfless. That is the interesting thing. That's the true contribution of divine eros, is how desire itself becomes a selfless love. Desire, instead, I want this, I have to have this, and I'm thinking to myself, becomes like the desire for your friend or for your husband or wife to be happy, to have what they want. I would love for you to be happy. That's a desire, but it's a desire for you. And this desire, when it is mutual between two people, desire and love are inseparable. You love the person, you desire them. What do you mean desire them? Because you love them, you want to be close to them. Desire and love, when you put them together, becomes a magnetic gravitational attraction. So whether you're friends or you're good colleagues or you're lovers, the presence of divine eros brings in kind of a loving, a gravitational force that wants to bring the two together as closely as possible in interaction and communication and doing things together. And so the desire what we call desire, becomes like a drive to be close, the desire for union, the drive for proximity, for intimacy. And the love, but it happens with love, out of love, expressing love. So we, in this book, rehabilitating the word desire, bring it back by bringing in the tantric understanding of desire, that desire, a force of life. It can be problematic, but if you know how to work with it, which means to connect it with the heart, it becomes a powerful force for illumination. And that's really why we wrote the book. We want to show that desire can be used for enlightenment by bringing selfless love with it. If desire and selfless love, if belly and heart get together, become unified in a seamless way, imagine the force. It's the love, which is most of us have, the love and compassion for our enlightenment, other people, but the desire, this powerful, instinctual
primal force. It's usually the most powerful thing human beings have. But it usually goes into trying to survive, trying to get something, trying to get famous. You know, it usually runs our life in ways that takes us away from the truth of who we are, from the, you know, the well-being of others. If that is recognized and worked with, so it's harmonized with the love, that's what we call divine eros. See? So desire is not only rehabilitated, but integrated and respected and actualized and expresses itself in a selflessly loving way. It becomes this powerful drive for realization and the well-being of the other out of a celebrating kind of love.
Yes.
Not because the person has a difficult time and I want to help them. No, I love them so much. I want the best for them. I'll do everything I can so they could be totally themselves. So you could be totally yourself. You could be the beauty that you are. You could be the luminous light that you are, because I would love to see it.
So it takes the future and the past out of desire and brings it completely in the now. So you're not feeling the desire and attributing it to how you're going to feel when you get such and such, how it's going to be when you get such and such. Feeling the desire gets kind of taken off track into, if I only had this person, this thing, this condition, this situation, it's going out into some imaginary thing that if only that were closer to me, then I would have what I want. Instead of feeling, like you could think right now, what do you want more than anything in the world? Or what do you want in the world that you think will bring you everything? Feel the feeling of how much you want it. Extract it from the thing and feel it exactly the way you feel it. 100% right now, the way you feel it. That is the feeling of desire. It's important to actually feel the feeling of desire.
Yeah, that's one thing we saw when we were doing the work, the seminar from which the book came out. We thought people have more difficulty with love than desire. Turned out it was the other way around. Most people had difficulty experiencing and acknowledging their desire. And we had to teach them how to just feel desire. It's okay to want.
Even the grasping, even the attachment, the whole thing. Go for it and feel it fully. If you don't, then those little arms are still in there doing this somewhere. And you're finding a place where that's not happening. But it doesn't include the totality of you, where there's still the tentacles and there's still... So you get up off of that Zafu, you go into life, and then it just starts grabbing everywhere. You got tentacles growing out of your everything. Go for it. Tentacles and all. Grab onto all of it and feel it like a fire in you. The energy within those grabby little tentacles, they've got a story to tell. There's something in that to understand, but at the same time, it's the same energy. Grasping energy is energy. Holding energy is energy. And it's all about that fire of desire. And we desire the things that we love. So the love and the desire are neighbors. And at some point, we feel it as one complete energetic sweetness.
Yeah. There are two stages in working with desire. First, liberating the desire. I mean, liberating it from its conditioning. It's been conditioned
from earlier on to be one way or another, to be go only in a certain groove, certain mode, certain kind of relationship, certain kind of pattern. It needs to be liberated from that, from those patterns that keeps it in those limited ways. And after it's liberated from its mode, habitual mode, then developing it. Next stage is develop for it to become alive, because it is the expression of the life force. So the life soul, as it becomes liberated from its patterns, which are the patterns of self and the difficult desires that becomes impediment to illumination, that liberation allows the possibility for us to feel the life force that manifests itself as desire, and then that can develop. And it's, in its development, it unites with the heart, with the self-love of the heart, to become what we call divine eros, instead of just eros, which usually people think eros is just desire. By making the divine eros, it's a loving desire. So we're just adding this element that we know we all experience once in a while, and we're saying it's a potential that can happen for us and can manifest in the various kind of relationships.
I think it's time for them to talk. What do you think?
I think good timing.
Any questions?
Good timing.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.